This program aired originally in 2016.
She's a worry now, walking down this same highway. I don't see nothing new, but I feel a lot of change. And I get the strangest feeling as I'm heading for the light.
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. This is Dr. Bob Hieronymus, a lowly PhD, hanging out here in this part of the Megaverse. And there are our engineers tonight, Noah Dankner and Chris Hines, and my boss, Laura Courtner, always pushing me around, because I need to be pushed around. Well, sit up straight out there, eyes straight ahead, no talking, and you can chew gum. In 1965, I had just finished my undergraduate study at Towson State, now Towson University. And although I should have been celebrating, I had some terrible dreams that had made my day-to-day life a living hell. They were all the same. Great flooding and fires that seemed to be responsible for the dead bodies that were floating by. Was the world coming to an end? And what the hell could I do about it? Then began over 5 years of psychiatric counseling to learn if I had lost all of my marbles. I could talk to no one about these ongoing experiences except professionals who would protect this secret. And there came a time when I had an opportunity to share this insanity with Dr. Chester Wickwire, when he asked me to paint a mural at Johns Hopkins University. He said, "Anything you want, Bob." And I did paint anything I wanted. Well, I completed this mural on February 25th, 1969, and it's called The Apocalypse. It's not the end of the world, but the end of a chapter of our planetary history. And it told the story of the death and rebirth of America. And we have just completed restoring this 2,700 square foot mural at Johns Hopkins University. Well, we've just sent our 72-page guidebook to the mural, which tells you everything you need to know about the great changes that our planet needs to make to remain a healthy goddess that she is. And joining us both hours tonight is another artist who had dreams that showed her the way to her meaning and purpose in life, and has created a book that I wish all of our listeners would read, because it will give you great hope and deeper understanding about Mary Magdalene, the only disciple of Christ who saw him and communicated with him, telling her to let the other disciples know that he was alive and well in the spiritual dimensions. The book is Mary Magdalene, Shaman, Awakening the Indigenous Christian Soul by Sarah Taft. At the age of 62, Sarah Taft discovered she had a serious autoimmune disease that was destroying her liver. Her healing journey led her to on a stunning shamanic path that revealed the power of the sacred feminine and brought her a successful liver transplant and a spiritual awakening. Now, this transformation flourished in Sarah's own artwork featured in this book and deepened her wisdom as an archetypal astrologer in the tradition of Carl Gustav Jung, our dear friend, her personal professional practice for over 30 years. And Sarah lives in Los Angeles, where she continues to paint, offer astrological consultation, and participates in group dream work. And she has two daughters and a son and seven grandchildren. You got any more grandchildren since this book's been written?
Good evening.
Well, good evening.
I have one great-granddaughter.
You got one great-granddaughter, but seven grandchildren.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I am so glad you were able to join us tonight, because...
Well, thank you. Thank you for the invitation. I'm very honored to be on your show.
Well, and so are we. We are honored that you should join us, Hera. You've done a very important job for our planet, and we need to get into this extremely fast because you think 2 hours is going to cover it all? No way.
I don't know. It took a long time to go through it.
Well, of course. Well, how would you like to see what your books looks like now? My book, the book that I read every page of, you should take a look at it. There's notes all over it. There are highlights. It's you don't see much of the book anymore. It's highlighted all over. That's important. Now this is now a kind of like a, well, it's kind of an index to you.
Thank you. I'm glad that you've read it so seriously.
Well, it was extremely important to my growth and development, and I'm certain it was in yours, right? Well,
yes.
How did you begin your journey? What prompted your search?
Well, maybe it was a big, huge bee dream. I had a larger-than-life dream when I was probably had just divorced, and I was probably in a quandary as to what was next. And I had a dream in which I went to my parents' house, and they weren't there. I went down to the back steps, and there was a flood. It covered the entire city. It covered the entire back of the house. And I could see forever, just water. So I left, and I came back in 3 days, and I walked down the steps and saw the water had receded. And when I looked carefully on the hill that surrounded the house, there were a lot of beehive cells. And in each beehive was a workman pumping water out of individual women in each cell, bringing sort of a whole feminine energy out into the world. It was astonishing. And when I backed up to look at it, it looked like something that you would see in Arizona, like cliff dwellings or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it was just awesome. And it actually determined my future with the feminine.
How's that? How is that?
Well,
I found out
that the bees were actually representative of the Melissae in the ancient world, and they were the helpers of the Great Mother. And so I think that it's time for the feminine to come out from underneath the patriarchal structures which have blocked it.
Well, you're only 300% right. That's all, though. Not above. Because without it, our planet, well, it's already in some pretty bad trouble. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, men just have not, I can say this because I'm a man, okay? Well, this lifetime anyway. Men just, unfortunately, were not sensitive enough to what was going on in their patriarchy to our planet, to our mom. And without our mom, we ain't got nothing.
I know.
And the bees are extremely important. You know, you would think that those who believe we don't have any big problems coming with global warming or global changes, they're going to have to wake up sooner or later. Mm-hmm. But there is a wonderful theory that I've always loved from theosophy, and that deals with the origin of bees. They have a theory, well, they don't call it a theory, they call it a fact, that the bees were from another planet, that they were brought here from Venus. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but I sure do like that theory. I'm a little bit
biased.
Well,
I mean, they are Venetian in that they connect the living world. They cross-fertilize and cross-pollinate, so without the bee, the world would not be as it is.
It sure as hell wouldn't. No. And we're going to be seeing some, well, hopefully we'll be able to find out what is going on with the bees, the loss of the bees. But I'm pretty certain it has something to do with chemicals. Chemicals that are in our environment that shouldn't be. Now, what happened after you had this dream?
Well, a lot of things. I've always been metaphysically curious and have read a lot of things, and so it wasn't different for me to start to ask questions about what's the meaning of this dream. And I took it to some people that do dream work, and they helped me with it, and I painted it, and just really got involved with the fact that I was being called to work with the feminine. And then I met this wonderful group of women. There was a woman up in Northern California, Maria Clausen, and she was a Jungian analyst, and she started a whole group of women. We called ourselves the Sisters of the Mysteries. Mm-hmm. We studied all of the goddesses, and we shared in circle our dreams and our visions. And that was the birth of really beginning to embody the feminine. First of all, I had never shared in groups. That was not something I grew up with. So it was new. It felt risky. But I learned that a lot of what I feared was shared and a common experience with a lot of women. So it was wonderful.
Oh, I bet it was. What about your mom and dad? How did they feel about this kind of philosophy, let's call it?
Well, they were tolerant. My dad would see little articles in magazines about mythology, because we were studying mythology and gods and goddesses. And then when I brought home astrology and told them about that, they were fairly tolerant. They didn't understand what I was doing, but it was okay with them. Mm-hmm. They weren't rigid type of people. So it was okay.
And you were an interesting kind of astrologer, too. Tell us a little bit about that, because you have some deep insights into these areas.
Mm-hmm. Well, I really have been a person who's integrated psychology with astrology. Mm-hmm. And it's something that's been happening more and more, say, in the last 10 years. And a lot of the new astrologers are using Jung's paradigm and structure to interpret charts, and it has given a lot of a body that's a little firmer than just symbols and a lot of emotional wisdom. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I do. In fact, this weekend I was at a retreat, and it was a dream workshop, and I helped with some of the interpretation based on the dream and then the person's chart, and it just was amazing how it would work.
Well, can you describe?
It's like heaven confirms their situation and gives advice.
Well, as above, so below.
Yes, it certainly does.
And can you just? Your dad knew something about. Didn't he refer to as above, so below?
I don't think he did, but he wasn't opposed to it. He was a Sagittarius, and he was had a deeply spiritual urge, but he didn't like organized religion, so mm-hmm. He was open to things.
Well, we're coming up upon a break right now, but when we come back, I'll give you your question in advance, and you can cheat if you'd like. You can you can read from your book if you'd like, or you can just do it off the top of your head. All right?
Okay.
So you sit up straight. You've been sitting up straight, right?
Yes.
And your eyes are straight ahead. That's good.
Yes.
That's good. Now, we don't have any problem with you tonight. And I'm sorry, folks. I'm enjoying myself because I enjoyed this book a great deal. It was a lot. It was not only interesting. I hope we get a chance to talk about Australia and your experiences down there, because you were with a group of women. Was that the same group of women from Northern California?
Uh-huh. Yeah, uh-huh.
How fortunate to have.
We went down the Grand Canyon, too.
What karma you guys must have together. Yeah. Well, we'll find out a little bit more of that when we come back with our guest, Sarah Taft. The book is Mary Magdalene, Shaman, Awakening the Indigenous Christian Soul, published by Create Space Independent Publishing Platform. Go to Sarah, S-A-R-A, Taft, TAFT.com, SarahTaft.com, and see an example of her artwork, the Ouroboros and the Lily, on the front page of 21stCenturyRadio.com, where you can also find the link to order her book, Mary Magdalene, Shaman.
is Rian Eisler. I'm the author of The Chalice and the Blade, The Real Wealth of Nations, and other books, and president of the Center for Partnership Studies. And I've just done an interview with Dr. Bob Hieronymus for 21st Century Radio, and I've really enjoyed it. So I encourage you to listen. And I also encourage you to go to our website, partnershipway.org.
Oh, there goes another one of those great women, Rian Eisler. And I know she's looking forward to our book coming out, Lady Liberty, and we'll talk about that another time. Our guest is Sarah Taft, Mary Magdalene Shaman, Awakening to the Indigenous Christian Soul, published by Create Space Independent Publishing Platform, sarahtaft.com. Sarah, I'm going to break some rules and regulations here. Is that okay?
Sure.
All right. Sarah, the major reason why I wanted to read this book was all about Mary Magdalene. And I learned a good deal from you there, from about Mary Magdalene. Could you tell us a little bit about how Mary Magdalene came into your life? I mean, when did this begin to happen?
Well, I was 62 when it happened, and I had gone to an astrologer quite a while ago who became my astrology teacher, mentor, wise man. And he told me in the reading, he said, you know, you don't have a lot of options here because you have emotional frustration, but the only way for that to change is for you to go someplace and die. I mean, it was a pretty stark type of diagnosis.
Yes, I'll say.
But I think that the reason why he said it so starkly is that when all of this was happening, they didn't have the word transformation or any of those new words that are used to describe the process.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I went through ups and downs, and so I was sort of familiar with going up and going down and feeling like I was going to die and then come back out of it. But then suddenly I got sick, really sick. And so I became very curious as to why I was sick, and I wanted to work with it because that's just the way I am. So I decided to go to a shaman out in Arizona, and so I went to him, and I spent 12 hours out there in the desert with him, and we did the shamanic work, and Mary Magdalene came to me during that time. She and Mother Mary held me at the conclusion after I hit a certain peak experience. And so that's how she entered my life. I didn't know about her before.
Before you knew about her, what you knew something about her from the Bible. What was your...
Very, very little. No, I was really surprised how hidden she was from me. Mm-hmm. From the religious training that I had had. And so as I explored it, I was just stunned. And then eventually when we went to France on a pilgrimage to visit some of the places where she is said to have lived and taught, I was stunned to see, like in Chartres Cathedral, she's in a huge statue with Jesus. And, I thought, how did this woman have all of this adoration and worship, and I didn't know about her, but the French had invited her into their psyches, and we hadn't here. And I don't think the traditional Catholic Church pays much mind to her. She was originally called a whore, a prostitute, and then they kind of redeemed her by calling her a penitent whore, a penitent disciple. And then now the current use of Mary Magdalene, people are beginning to see how she's a supportive spiritual influence in connecting to the other world,
mm-hmm.
with visions and dreams. And so her meaning has changed significantly.
Especially as it should be, because she is the only disciple who had the capability of seeing,
yes,
the Christ when he was in his spiritual body.
Yes.
I'm sorry to speak over. you. I didn't mean to. It's just, but that to me is such an extremely important point.
And, I know.
And it's overlooked. In the past, it has been overlooked. It isn't now overlooked. All kinds of wonderful knowledge is coming out in the last 30, 40 years, and things are changing a bit, but as far as I'm concerned, certainly not fast enough. I've forgotten what the term in the Christian tradition was, or Roman Catholic Church was, for prostitute. Prostitute didn't necessarily mean a whore. It had a totally different meaning, but I can't recall what it was anymore.
I don't think I know that. I wasn't raised as a Catholic. So I'm not familiar with that. I know they did call her a penitent prostitute.
That's when
she was redeemed by finding Christ.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, she was redeemed.
Now you mentioned that statue in France in which there were Jesus and she were together, but you did also discover something else about that. But was that the same statue that they later had cut in half?
They
and
did.
Separated
yes.
them?
Some of the women I knew in this group went back to visit Chartres with their daughters, and it wasn't there. And the church had sawed the statue in half, and it placed it way at the end of the church, separated from each other. We were just floored.
Yes. There's nothing like hiding it. If you can't hide it, you hide it somewhere else. It is... That's just, I mean, here you have, they took a piece of artwork and they destroyed it.
Yes.
Because they didn't want these two together.
Right. Well, they were fearful of her power because she had really quite an influence in the early Christian movement. And then when it started to become institutionalized, the hierarchy didn't want her to have that kind of power.
Mm-hmm.
So they crushed it.
They didn't even
it's re-emerging.
Yes, but they didn't even want Mother Mary to have any kind of power as well.
I know.
It's unfortunate because I'm sitting here, we have two Mother Marys here. And we have the Statue of Liberty, and we have a lot of other goddesses behind me, Native Americans and everything. And they all get along darn well. I mean, I've never had a problem with these guys in here. All the way, going back all the way to past the Samaria, we got them back there. Mm-hmm. That's one of the great things about the divine feminine. It is so universal and so Christ-like from the standpoint of unconditional love, which is exactly where we need to go.
Yes. Well, the feminine is inclusive. I mean, that's the difference. The masculine separates things to figure them out and to fix things, which is necessary. But the feminine includes things. So she's the... you know, the icon of possibility.
Yes.
So by doing that, people have cut away a lot of, you know, options that might come to their mind if they let her in to help them. So
now,
and I think there's a difference between Magdalene. I really feel the difference for me. Mary feels like she's the giver, she's the feminine icon of forgiveness and mercy, and that Magdalene is the passionate connection to Christ. It's a very different, one's a mother, son, and one's a lover.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think she really connects you to the passion you feel and can really welcome in your life, particularly when you're in a stuck place and you're praying to Christ to help. I mean, that kind of passion is connected to Mary Magdalene.
Well, she, I think the future for her is very bright, but it certainly was very dark for such a long time.
Yeah.
I'm interested also in, obviously, your dreams. You've had some really significant dreams.
I have. They've really been my guides because you can't trust your ego.
That's for sure. Yes.
It wants its own way, right?
Yeah.
So
That's right.
The dreams come from the unconscious, which is the you know, it's like the springs of the psyche.
Will you tell us about a dream you had while working at the Los Angeles Jung Institute? Friends, I got to stop here in a second. It is so, I envy a great deal, Sarah. I envy your location on the planet.
Because I live near the Jung Institute.
Yes, of course. Of course. I'm over here stuck on the East Coast, and it took us 175 years before we understood what Carl Jung was doing. And most people still don't, and they haven't even looked at his Red Book. Did you read his book, Red Book, yet?
Well, I haven't read it, but I've looked at all the paintings.
They are
so exquisite. Oh. Yeah, he's just a master.
Oh, I'll say. He's proved his mastership. What a great, great soul. But one of the most interesting things I found about this particular area here is your statement that judgment blocks flow.
Yes.
Now, we're not talking about flow as a person. We're talking about flowing. Flowing. That's got to be extremely important. Because
it's really important to the body, because what happened, I was diagnosed with a liver disease, and, you know, as you read in the book, I was fortunate, blessed enough to receive a good liver. And when I went to my acupuncturist later, Amir Zagras, he's been my angel, he told me all about how the liver functions, and he said, The liver is the administrator of flow in the body. It gets everything to where it's supposed to go. It has 500 functions.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, your flow was interrupted, and so the whole liver dried up. And it was from anger. It was repressed anger about a lot of things that I could not live or say when I was growing up. This is not an uncommon problem, you know.
Well, that's one of the problems of Christianity today, because it doesn't pay attention to Jesus Christ and what he taught concerning judgment. And, you know, as we've moved farther and further to the right in this country, which is destroying our country, as we do that and we lose our democratic republic and we move to a corporate oligarchy, which is happily the great heaven of those who believe that the 1% should rule. That's really made a very big difference. But it's hardened, in my opinion, the energy fields of many, many people who are good people, but judgment, they judge quickly and point their fingers quickly, and they do worse than that. They would stone you to death. And that's, you know, it's a very dangerous group of people. I've had to deal with them for almost all of my life, and they're pretty violent. But you found your own philosopher's stone.
Yes.
Wow, what a story.
That was so amazing. It's to this day, it's as miraculous as if it happened today. Mm-hmm. Because that was a sign later indicated by one of my friends. She said, I think you're going to get a liver, because I had to wait for a while. She said, you'll get a liver because you found that stone, the two halves of the stone, and they were over 100 miles apart.
Oh, you got to tell the story. You got to tell the story.
Well, I'd gone up to Yosemite with my children, and we were hiking. And so I went down after we'd hiked down to the store on the floor of Yosemite, went into the store, and they had all these geodes spread out on the a tin kind of table. And I had just been looking at geodes and collecting a few because I was so interested in the outside surface being so different than the inside. When you cut them open and polish them, they're beautiful on the outside. They're rough. They look like a toad, you know. So I was very fascinated with this. And here I found one in the market. Then we left in a few days and went down home, going on the way home, we went to Mariposa Grove. We walked into the ranger station there after taking a tour through the Mariposa redwoods, and came back, and there was the other half there in the store. And the ranger said, "This has never happened. They lived 125 miles apart, and they're brought from the northwest in trucks."
And they attracted each other.
And
one fit into the other.
And actually, when you put them together, they look like a little ancient goddess figure, worship figure, which was even more stunning, too. But, you know, so when I was waiting for a liver, I just kept thinking about this and praying with it. And I received a wonderful liver that kept me alive a lot longer.
Well, we're going to take a break here so we can keep ourselves alive a lot longer here on this radio station. Our guest, of course, is Sarah Taft, Mary Magdalene, Shaman Awakening the Indigenous Christian Soul. Now, I know some of you out there are waiting to hear about what does Indigenous Christian Soul mean. Well, we'll get to that. And also, what does a shaman mean? How is she related to Mary Magdalene? We're going to get all these answers from our dear friend SarahTaft.com. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
This is Elaine Pagels, author of the Gnostic Gospels, and also of a new book called Revelation, Visions, Prophecy, and Politics in the Book of Revelation. I'm a professor of religion at Princeton University, and you are listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
My goodness, we haven't heard from Dr. Pagels in more than 2 weeks. Actually, maybe 3 weeks. But we've been thinking about her a lot. And we've also been thinking a lot about Sarah Taft. Why? Because we've just spent a week reading her book, Mary Magdalene, Shaman, Awakening the Indigenous Christian Soul, published by Create Space, independent publishing platform. And you can reach her at SarahTaft.com. And we were talking a little bit about this symbolic philosopher's stone that she found. But then I really wanted to move into the direction of shamans, because she's referring to Mary Magdalene as a shaman. Isn't that correct?
Yes.
Please tell our audience, what is a shaman?
Well, you know, Jesus was a shaman. They don't say that about him, but he was shamanic. He was in touch with the unseen world, and he was able to see through facts of illness or whatever was bothering the people he healed to who that person was. And that's not actually seen in any overt way, but he was in touch with that. So shamanic work is connecting to the other world. Therapists are shamans. They're able to see things that the client cannot see. So it's a relationship to this world and the other world and the communication between the two worlds. So anytime we have a dream, it's a message from the unseen world. And it's good for us to pay attention to what the message is trying to get to us. So anyway, I have just reaped so much wisdom from shamanism. And it's connected to the earth and the elements, which I think are extremely important, because a lot of the Christian thinking takes you to heaven, into transcendence, and leaves the body out, which has happened within the whole psycho-spiritual world. So right now, I think the body is becoming very much more addressed and important to people, because that's where illness hits, and that's where they can see things that can either take them to death or get them well. So they're connected to the body and to the spirit, and they see spirit in matter. And I think that this is some of the new physics we're seeing this too, but the shamans were ahead of them here.
Oh, I'll say. Yeah. You learned that shamanism is not an academic subject.
No, it's experiential. And Mary Magdalene, for me, was, I mean, I did read certain things about her, but she was an experience for me. And so she's experiential. She's the presence in rooms when you have a feeling of being warm and something is going on and you're not sure what it is. That's that feminine, that sacred feminine that she is so embodied.
Do you love the travel?
Love it.
I thought so. Mainly because I read your book, so there. So I cheated. Oh, okay, I wasn't being psychic there, but you know that experience. And we want to touch on this because it's super important. In your experience with the Aboriginals in Australia, you learned that the Pleiades or the Seven Sisters crossing the sky as they sought refuge from Wadi Nehru. I was going to ask you about a little bit about Wadi Nehru. Because I found this a little bit funny.
It was funny.
Yeah,
we all had a few giggles about it.
Yeah, I bet you. So tell us about Wadi Nehru and why they wanted to try to get away from him.
Well, they say he had a penis that could wrap around his waist.
Jeez.
So he was always in pursuit of the sisters, and so one day they went into a cave and hid, and he came right through and came up through the cave. Yeah, maybe his penis was leading the way. We're not sure about that. But anyway, they fled to the seven sisters, and so they dance up there in heaven, and reminding us of the seven sisters' escape. But as my shaman fellow Conrad said, he said they were really going to dream time, because in the Aboriginal way of thinking, there is no heaven. Heaven is all around you. It's everywhere. There's no division. So they were going into dream time and to send out their loving feminine messages to the universe. So they just have wonderful stories that anyone can really get, you know, moved by and inspired by. So it takes away just, you know, box thinking and opens up your imagination.
Now, this wasn't just an ordinary trip, because
they had
some other business that was going on. Some children got lost or something, and so you couldn't stay where you were supposed to stay, and you got the places where you had to sleep and everything totally changed. Is that correct?
Yes, it was a little frightening for a while until we got settled, but then finally we did get settled. And we were settled right near a group of Aboriginals who took care of us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they watch us, they guide us on the earth and the dirt, and it's pretty dry out there, and there's tons of snakes. So they led us in the paths where the snakes weren't, and they told us what to do at night if spiders crawled on us. You know, I mean, it was quite an experience. They believe that the earth and spirit are one. So they dance and they sing and they tell stories, and that's how they know that they're in dreamland. That's their living dream.
And you joined them in the dancing.
Yes, we did.
Yes, I did. I don't have any pictures of you doing this.
Those aren't allowed.
I don't think you're allowed to have them out anyway. But that was very, very interesting from the standpoint of this was a group of women, three of them, wasn't it? Three African-Americans. No, they weren't African-Americans. They were Australian Aborigines, sorry.
Yeah, the Aboriginal women were the ones that took us. We dug for, you know, ants. For honey ants.
And you ate some.
Yeah, we were right out there with them.
You were eating them, weren't you?
Yeah. When they use them for sore throats, because it's like honey. It helps them with anything they get in their throat.
And as you said, they were very proud of showing you how they could exist and live on almost on nothing in the desert.
It's amazing. They're truly men and women of the spirit of the earth. You know, it's just, and you know, they're the oldest religion, I think, that's been practiced. So they worship the animals, and they have everything is named after animals. You know, the different trails and the mountains, and just I think men, before they could marry a woman, they had to pass the test. They had to shoot an arrow at a cliff at a very specific place, and if they couldn't do it, then the parents of the girl wouldn't let her be married because he had to hunt to keep them all alive. And they had moral codes that they wrote all over the walls about incest and about stealing and about all sorts of, you know, ethical rules of their culture.
So they did they give birth to graffiti?
No way. No, but they gave birth right on the ground, and then they buried their placenta in the earth. And that was done to know that that was that child's place on earth, no matter what happened.
You learned a lot about placentas, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, and they do it in other countries, too. Mm-hmm. We here, we just put it in a...
Throw it away.
You know, a trash bag and throw it away.
Yeah.
So, it was... And the place of birthing was by a pool, and they would go out onto a rock and birth their babies. Yeah, it was very moving, very, very moving.
What is meant by Mary Magdalene as light itself?
Pardon me?
Light itself. Mary Magdalene,
you know,
as light.
I don't know what was meant by that, but that was, statement was made by this French tour woman right there at the Basilica there in France. I'm afraid of getting where it is right now. But there was a little kind of cave that we went down into, and they were showing all the meridians of where the church was built. Mm-hmm. And she was a lovely French woman, and she said, Mary Magdalene is the light.
Is the light.
She just insisted on that. We didn't have time to question her about that, but she was worshipped very, very devotedly in France.
In France, in this particular area where you were, was it believed that she and Jesus were a twosome?
I think probably it was assumed. We didn't ask any people there, but books have certainly been written about that they more or less were together for very spiritual purposes. Some say that she was a teacher of Jesus in many ways, and that she had come from Syria. And there's a number of accounts and different, opinions about it. I myself think she was probably, she was never Mrs. Jesus, but she was a very devout partner.
Mm-hmm.
And, the thing of it is, she was with him through the entire crucifixion. She never left him. And all the other ones fled because they were afraid the soldiers were going to get them.
Well, that's the, I hate to put it this way, but that's the difference, I think, between, I won't say it. I'll say it anyway. I mean, that's the difference between men and women. Women have enormous amounts of courage. Because if they they will protect their child to the very death.
The gift of the feminine, when it's really understood and appreciated, is that it's really deep emotional intelligence as it's married to spiritual matters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been missing in our culture, and it's affected many people. They have not been trained to even think of things as emotional intelligence. So a lot of things that happened, in the last generation and how parents treated their children, it was... To be compassionate for them, as they had no training in how to do it. They followed strict rules and punished strictly, and I think that's really changing now.
That's a very good thing that it is. Can you tell us about, we've got just a couple of minutes before the end of the hour, but about the indigenous Christian soul and what that means?
Well, it's about being connected to the earth and to the body and to the elements, and not to think about heaven as just up high. It's right here now, right on Earth. And the indigenous people know that, and they worship that, and they're comfortable with their bodies and with the earth and the cycles of nature. We've gotten pretty removed from that. Now with our science and the technology, it's much more accelerated, too. So the wisdom is the wisdom of the body and the feelings and the emotions and the visions, and they live with visions and dreams and community.
Well, I think one of the things it does is give much more meaning to life, which I think is really key, because everyone has a meaning and purpose on this planet. We have our next purpose is to take a break here on 21st Century Radio and to check what's going on with the rest of the planet. And Sarah Taft will be rejoining us when we return. Mary Magdalene, Shaman, Awakening to the Indigenous Christian Soul, published by Create Space Independent Publishing, sarahtaft.com.